Think you can tackle a 9-state putter row? Well, how about 9 New England states? We're getting our first impressions from Jason and Kyle on their take on what it's like to pota in New England. Hello, and welcome to the Live Free and Ham podcast. It's our bi-weekly show where we explore ham radio topics in New Hampshire, New England, and beyond. Whether you're a regular listener or first-time guest, we're excited to have you here and appreciate your support, don't we ever. Thanks for tuning into this week's episode. But before we get into today's show, I'm your host, Eric, call sign N1JUR, and I'm here with my co-hosts.
Ryan, W1SNH.
Todd, W1STJ.
And we got two special guests.
Jason, KC5HWB.
Kyle, AA0Z.
All right, guys, great to have you on. All right, well, hey, before we start the show discussion, we always like to catch up and let our listeners know what's going on. This month's live stream's coming up, so we're going to go casual style and do a roundtable. Topic is currently up in the air, but definitely make sure you tune in and subscribe to the channel and hit that bell so you never miss the show. And as always, you know, as we start off every show, you know, what's been going on with ham radio this week? How about you, Ryan?
Yeah, well, I'm happy to report I came home today from work and put aside all my house projects and focused on getting the new Flex hooked up. So as of about 45 minutes ago, I got it operational, spent the afternoon crimping some coax, got some RJ45s crimped, and it's very nice radio. So I'm really enjoying it and got a lot to learn here. So I'll keep plugging away. I got one of the 8x2 antenna switches, so I still got to get that wired up. And you know, it's just a big learning curve, but it'll be fun. So really looking forward to it.
Yeah, very much so. And as we all can contest in some level, it's definitely away from the knobs and turning the VFO to, you know, clicking of the mouse. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, I must have pulled out, I don't know how many extra cables. I mean, those just went away. It was great.
So. Simplified a heck of a lot of stuff, for sure. Cool. All right. Well, hey, how about you, Todd? What's been going on?
Nothing much. My biggest thing was I couldn't use my Flex remotely for whatever reason. Did a lot of trying to figure out what was wrong with it. I still don't know what the problem was, but whatever I did, it fixed the whole problem. I finally got it on my iPad, and then I couldn't get on my iPhone. I thought, well, maybe it's the new iPhone, the 15 Plus. So I said, yeah, maybe it's something in the hardware. They haven't fixed it. And then all of a sudden, it just worked the next day. So I was pretty happy to be back using it remotely. So cool. That's basically about it.
You doing still sideband stuff or?
Just doing the sideband stuff when I'm doing the third shift overnight.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, hey, you know, before I kind of chime in here, you know, hey, so Jason, you know, obviously we'll give you the floor first. You know, what's been kind of going on in your ham week this week?
This week, I'm kind of trying to play catch up really this week. I've been out of town for the last 3 weekends, and my wife and I were, we actually went to do a POTA last week, and then we went to see a high school, college football game.
Oh, very cool.
some football game somewhere. And before that, I was at an RV radio show, and I've just had a really full month for the month of October of being out of town. So this week, I've been playing catch up around the house, putting stuff together, getting some more videos recorded here in the shack. I've actually redesigned my whole I'm 50-60% of the way through redesigning the whole shack. You can't see it because everything I did was over there, but and in front behind the camera. In case somebody can't see that right now or listen on audio, but I got a couple things upcoming. Hunting season starts in Texas in about 2-3 weekends.
Cool.
And it's totally we have about 175 acres out in the country that's totally off grid. There's no water, no running water, no electricity, no nothing. So I have fun making off grid solar battery and ham radio videos while I'm out there. So I've already got 3 or 4 in the works for that. So it should be a fun month next month. But just cleaning up around the house right now.
Very cool. Now, so my dying question is you said the wife was with you on POTA. Does she actually do POTA, or she just stare at you and roll her eyes?
She has not done POTA yet. She said she wanted to. She does have a general class license. She got her general upgrade maybe a year and a half ago, something like that.
Nice.
So she does want to do it. She hunted a station when we were all at Huntsville last August for the Ham Fest. We sat up in the pavilion and did a POTA activation. So she hunted one station. But she uses her VHF UHF radio, but she hadn't done any HF really yet. So I'm looking forward to getting her on the mic and trying that out.
Yeah, very cool, very cool, awesome. Well, hey, over to you, Kyle. So what's been your ham week like?
Yeah, it's been busy. First, Whiskey One Alpha Whiskey Stroke Zero was our volunteer on the air week for Missouri. So I got on a couple of times on 20 and 40 meters and made, I don't know, 350, 400 contacts.
Nice. Those on all that. Sideband or CW?
Mostly were sideband. I did a few CW. Mm-hmm. It's just running CW as Whiskey One Alpha Whiskey is like shooting yourself in the foot. Like it, you are, be ready for the pileup. Mm-hmm. And it is a lot easier to run sideband than it is CW. So I decided, you know what, both times I ran that station, I was after work. I had had long days at work, and I'm just like, I am just not ready to hear all the beeps and the bloops, you know, and just the everyone zero beating me. I was not interested in any of that. So sideband it was. So I got on the air a few times, got some slots in, and put some cues in the books. Last weekend was a big CUSO party weekend. It was Nevada, South Dakota, Washington, Arizona, and I forget the other one that was Nebraska, maybe? I can't remember. But then also it was the Solar Eclipse CUSO party.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I went out with a bunch of friends to Opota Park, Robinson State Park here in Missouri, and we activated from, I don't know, 9 a.m. to in the morning till about 3 p.m. in the afternoon. And then came home and, chilled out for the rest of the weekend. This weekend is this is going to air afterwards, but Illinois CUSO party is Sunday. Uh-huh. And if you know anything about geography, hopefully you know that Illinois borders Missouri. So I roll over there and from noon until 8 p.m., Illinois CUSO party goes on. But I am actually driving to Indiana, driving through Illinois and doing the CUSO party and driving to Indiana to put a down payment on an RV on Monday morning.
Oh, my. Okay.
So, and on my way back, I bought a Elecraft KPA 500 amplifier, and I'm picking that up from one of my Society of Midwest contesters people that sold it to me. So I'm picking that up on the way back. So I've got a very jam-packed weekend and week putting that at the remote station and figuring out what I'm going to do with my RV. So
you're going to fully automate that and, you know, keep it.
Of course.
Okay. But that was expected.
It's going to have, so, you know, it's going to have APRS. I'm going to run Node-RED on it. It's going to be fully just all decked out.
I'm going to make sure Mike can hear it from Texas.
Right, right. I mean, I'm talking about the RV and the amplifier.
Yeah. So the RV itself, you pull in a travel trailer, you got a full, you know, mobile home RV?
No, pull behind.
All right, cool. Nice. So, cool. Yeah. So Jason has basically lured you towards the dark side there and, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've always wanted an RV, and it's gotten to the point where it's poop or get off the pot, right? And Jason and I always go to the Moore Expo, which is down in Springfield, and we've been talking about going to a bunch of overlanding shows, and there is a hiker trailer is the trailer that I'm gonna buy, and they really stood out as being family-owned and good quality, and some of these overland trailers, the prices are through the roof.
They're ridiculous. Mm-hmm. They are ridiculous.
So I can literally get and save about $5,000 or $7,000 and get everything that the big boys have, but get it cheaper.
Yeah.
Because they start out at, like, you know, the one that I want to get starts out at $14,000.
That's reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah. If you got an overlanding trailer from some of these guys that, you know, they're literally going into to the depths of Utah and, you know, not seeing each other for, you know, years on end.
Yep.
Yeah, months on end. I mean, they start out at 35.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. That's base. That's not like with the hard tops or, you know, any of the amenities, too.
Right.
It's insane
right.
What they charge for them.
Right. So, yeah, I'm going to – this is my first forte into, you know, stepping up from tent camping and actually having sidewalls, you know, and actually being protected from the bears in in Colorado. So
it'll be a game changer for sure.
Yellowstone.
Yeah. So we're all going to Yellowstone next July. Mm-hmm. And obviously I'm going to.
Well, you can also tow it if you go to Arcadia up that way too. So, you know, it's a benefit. Yeah. That'll look great in Arcadia for sure.
Of course. So, yeah.
Well, wow. Yeah. So, interesting. So no, maybe possible side channel, like Jason doing overlanding.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to put together, you know, my first video is me driving to Indiana and actually going to the warehouse and picking it out and doing all the things that you need to do. Cool. So that will be the first video. Will I do an overlanding channel? Well, will I do like, you know, continually overland stuff? Probably not, because I've got a way too busy schedule to go out like every single weekend and do stuff. I'll put videos up whenever I can, but ham radio channel is my main focus. Maybe. There.
Got it. Yeah, cool. Awesome.
And I'll be going to Vermont on Friday.
Oh yeah, that's right. You
activate a park.
That's right.
Yeah, just yeah. So you've got all these traveling. I'm just jumping across the river on my way. I have one visit in the morning in New Hampshire. I have another visit in New Hampshire, but the way to get to it, you got to go through Vermont. So there's a nice park sitting there. So I figured I got a couple hours to kill. So I haven't done an activation in a while. So I figured it's going to be good weather and might as well go back to Vermont. And going to Vermont's a good state because everyone wants Vermont. So even if the bands aren't too happening, you get a lot of, you pick up a lot of,
I mean, you guys made a kill it for drummer, didn't you guys with that?
Yeah,
dumber.
Everyone here is now dumber for having listened to it.
Well, you know, so is the guy who got the fort named after himself. So, but
right, yeah.
That was a good park.
Yeah,
that was a good park.
Cool. So, Kyle and Jason, you know, the landscape and the terrain out in Texas and in the Midwest, it's you know, it's not Montana big sky country, but it's you know, wide open terrain and vast areas compared to New England, where you got a lot of small, tight rolling hills and a lot more vegetation and trees and everything. As you guys were sneaking through New England, how did you adapt to that? Were you swapping out different antennas, or did you have to change anything compared to putting back home?
So it was different in the sense of, I knew that when we got into the hills a little bit west of where we were activating, especially in Vermont and a little bit of New Hampshire, you know, I don't know what mountain ranges those are, but I definitely, whenever we got to Vermont, I switched over to 40 meters because I know from whenever James, KE8PZN, whenever I went out to West Virginia, we tried 20 meters in the hills of West Virginia, and it was a no go. Like, we just couldn't raise anybody because we just weren't getting out. And the angle of takeoff wasn't, you know, was very low, and we were just running into mountains. Yeah. So whenever I got to Vermont, I knew that even if I was, you know, using 20 meters at all the other parks, which, you know, I primarily did, I switched over to 40 meters and made sure that, you know, I put that 40 meter antenna low to the ground so I'd get a little bit of invis. And sure enough, like, you know, I worked probably, I was one of my better parks. I probably worked 40 or 50, QSOs, and they were all within the New England area. I think my farthest QSO that I made, I think, was Ohio.
Cool.
And he was on CW most of the time, as you guys probably know.
Right.
But, I, you know what? I didn't really notice much other than just like, what band is up and down right now, which is what you look for every time you go out to put it all.
Right.
I did notice that Vermont is a highly sought after state. Apparently either Vermont is hard to get, or there's just not many people who POTA in Vermont.
That is true. There's very few hams per capita in the state of Vermont. So yeah, right. You get that going for you.
So, you know, and I when I get North Dakota, I'm always excited to get North Dakota when I'm out on a POTA and I get somebody calling back to me from North Dakota.
See, Todd, you should ask Jason how he got his North Dakota, because you're still struggling for yours.
Yeah. But, you know, Kyle's not wrong, but the only thing I really noticed working sideband mostly, I did a little bit of FT8, but I didn't do any CW, obviously. But we got to the Fort Dummer State Park, and that was the one in Vermont, right, Kyle?
Yeah.
Okay. So we got to that one earlier in the day than we got to any other park. It was about 9:15 in the morning when I had my antenna set up and radio turned on and started calling CQ.
Yeah,
so we got there at like 8 or 8:30, something like that. And people had been asking us, get on 40 meters. We want to work you guys. You know, people in the area had been saying, hey, get on 40 meters. So I worked a lot of New England that morning as well on 40 meters because the band hadn't died yet. I talked to Izzo and he said the band usually dies around 12 or 12:30 in the that around noon or something like that. The 40 meter band, I should say.
Right.
And that coincides with Texas. It usually dies around 11 a.m. in Texas. Then it'll open back up around 4 or something like that on a regular day. So I wanted to get some 40 meter in, and I probably made 60 or so contacts that morning. And then I switched to 20 and made a lot more contacts. But yeah, for me, it was more just like, what time of day is it? And I'll tell you right now, I don't like to POTA on 20 meters because it's too easy.
I mean, how so? Why? So I'm curious because I hear like both sides of the fence of like, yeah, 20 meters is my go-to band every time. And, you know, that's where I stay all the time. And, you know,
right.
Why is it?
I mean, it's too easy. I mean, there's always people there. You're always going to be able to activate on 20 meters.
Okay.
I mean, unless there's something really weird going on, I like to try 10 or 15 meters, 17 meters, 12 meters. I did 12 meters one time. That was unusual. It's unusual for 12 meters to be open. I like 40 meters. I've done some 80 meters, but it's been a long time. Antenna, depending on where you're set up. So a lot of times you don't have room to put up an 80 meter infant half wave.
Right.
But for me, it was just what time are we acting, you know, cause that was the first park we did that day. I think we did 3 parks that day.
Yeah.
And by the time we got to the third park, it was mid afternoon. So we just started on 20 meters and went for it. So, you know, for me, it's just, hey, what time of day is it? And is anything besides 20 open? If so, I try that. And then I'll usually go to 20 meters after I've tried the other bands, because you know you're going to, even if I've made 10 or 15 or 20 contacts and I'm activated, I'll usually go to 20 meters because I'm just like, well, there's just more people here. More people have an antenna. I suspect more people have an antenna for 20 meters. A lot of people don't have an antenna for 10 or 12 or 17 meters. So it's easier to make contacts. And I like to get, you know, people like to hunt as much as activate. So I want to give the hunters a chance as well.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I like to start off on another band and then go to 20 as my backup. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite band is for me recently has just been 10 meters. Mm-hmm. I'll start off on 10, see where I got, see if I get anything. And like you said, I get a lot of hunters, you know, oh, thanks for activating 10. Thanks for activating 10. So you get those in, and then, you know, if I don't get enough of them or, you know, it's starting to die down, I'll switch over to 20 and it's like starting all over again and you just get the pile up. So, that's pretty much how I've been doing it.
I like to do that with 10. If 10 is open, I will start on 10. If it's not, I'll usually start on 15.
Right.
Because with a 40 meter infed half wave, you can do 10, 15, 20, and 40.
Right.
And with no tuner. And, you know, so I try to take advantage of all of those bands. I don't try 40 if it's middle of the day, but like Kyle was saying, I mean, that Vermont State Park was first thing in the morning. So I'm like, hey, let's try it. And I did really well. So, and you know, see, a sideband is the, I probably catch hell for this. Sideband is harder to activate than it is to activate, than it is. It's harder. Let me rephrase. It's harder to make contacts on sideband than it is on CW or FT8. Just because of propagation, just because of the low noise feature of it.
Yep.
You got to have a lot more power. I say a lot more. I was running 100 watts the whole time because life is too short for QRP. But
sorry, Kyle.
But Kyle did very well running CW. And we had planned this before that we went on the trip. He was running his KX3 with 15 watts most of the time on CW, and he made a lot of contact. So, you know, it works out. It worked out for both of us to run the way we were both running.
Yeah. So like in terms of like when you guys did obviously the activations in New England, you guys find that, you know, it was you in your plan, you were like, hey, I'm just going to start on the, you know, 15 and, you know, 12 and start there. Or were you just like, okay, like you said, you know, because of the time frame and, you know, your schedule and stuff like that, you just kind of targeted the two big bands and just went that way.
I went where Jason was not blowing me out at.
Right.
Did Jason ever turn down his QRO?
There were a couple of parks where everywhere I went, there was rah, 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 rah. So I had to strategically figure out where I needed to go to not hear Jason. Mm-hmm. And kind of like, you know, go as far away as possible. But 30 meters was my haven.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That was my all right. Yeah, Jason's on 15, I'm going to go to 30. Yeah. If I was on 40 and Jason was on 20, I heard him a little bit, not much, but if I was on 40 and he was on 15, get out of.
Yeah, you were done.
You're done.
Yeah. Yeah, those two.
And whenever we activated the High Point State Park, which was in New Jersey, mm-hmm. I sat at a picnic bench probably 50 feet from Jason, and I could tell that he was on the higher bands because I activated on 30 and I didn't hear him, and he was on 10. I went over and I found out that he was on 10. He was running 10, and there was an opening into Europe. Mm-hmm. And so he was doing 10, and I literally ran the bands. I went to 15, I went to 30, I went to 20, and then I went to 40. And then as soon as he came back down, I could hear him. And then I went to 10, okay. And I worked a bunch of German stations.
The leapfrog. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. So I would literally figure out where he was at and try and figure out, all right, what band do I need to go to now to make sure that he's not blowing me out? And there was a couple of times where I just pushed through it, you know. I'm going to call CQ, and I'm going to be able to hear the dits and the das, and it is what it is, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, so when you guys, you know, obviously you went through 9 different states. So, like, did you find that like every park was just a different challenge every time, or did you find that like most of the New England parks were, you know, pretty much catered to, you know, picnic benches and nice green spaces and that type of stuff, or, you know, kind of what, any of those weird challenges you guys run into in any of the 9, you know, park states you did activate?
I think the only park that we had an issue where we had to stand the whole time was that
New York.
Yeah, that New York forest.
State forest. And it was just like at the end of
Huckleberry.
A road.
Huckleberry State Something Forest.
Like, yeah. It was at the end of a road. You drive through a neighborhood and you're like, there's a forest out here, and you get to the end of the road. It's a dead end and it says, welcome to State Forest, and just right there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have to park at the end to be in the park. And that was when the band gods decided to open the 20-meter band, and Kyle and I we just set up in the back of the car, and we're like, we'll just pass the mic back and forth, and we'll just make 10 contacts each, and we'll get out of here. And 20 meters just lit up on fire. It was like, 2 or 3 in the afternoon? I think that was the last one we did for that day. And it was just back-to-back, just pile-up after pile-up just the whole time. We each made like... That was a funny story, actually. So... If you go to the POTA website and you look up the top 5 activators, the top 5 number of QSOs, and the top 5 hunters, we did not do that for this park. We each made 110 contacts at that New York park. And as we packed up, we're driving back, and I'm on my phone looking at the POTA website. And I said, Kyle, the top number of QSOs in this park was 109.
Yeah.
So we each got 110. So we took over the number 1 and number 2 spot. There it is right there. Yeah. And we weren't even trying. We're like, crap, we should have just waited another 30 minutes and gotten way ahead of the guy. But
And what's funny was it just the pileup just never stopped. And we were like, literally, we were going to do, all right, 20. And then it could be 25. Okay, let's do 50.
Yeah.
How about 75? Okay, well, we can spend another 20 minutes here and do 100, right? Well, how about 110? You know, it's just we couldn't get out.
No. In a good way.
Well, dude, that's like perfect memory. Like, dude, you're going to never forget that. That's going to be like one of those parks that you always go like, oh, that was my golden park. You know, I'll never get 110 contacts ever in that short of a period of time. So... Cool. So like in terms of your parks and the, you know, obviously you tried to bring everything you possibly could in terms of, you know, the equipment and hardware and whatnot. Did you find that when you got to like, I know you guys started in, was it Connecticut with Izzo, and you started to activate from that beach park. That was, you know, how many contacts you get out of that? And did you find that like the beach propagation was good, a benefit to you guys, or was it just bad band conditions at the time?
That was actually Rhode Island.
Oh, Rhode Island. Okay.
Yeah, he drove us out there, and we didn't activate Connecticut until the very last day. But that was Rhode Island, and we drove out there with Don, and
it was horrible.
It was horrible because it was really windy.
Oh, okay.
It was really windy, and it was a little cold. I mean, you know, Texas boy cold. So it was chilly. It was probably in the 60s. It wasn't cold.
What we call light jacket and shorts in New England.
That's shorts weather around here.
Yeah, we're putting on parkas out here. I'm just kidding. It's been in the 60s and very nice here this whole week. But if I can
remember, we had a bunch of RF issues too.
Yes. Yeah. So we set up. It was like a concession stand deck area.
Right.
For and there were people out there, and there was like a little jungle gym for the kids on one side, and some beach access, and some of that that fencing that protects the vegetation there, kind of all around the area. So we set up on the deck outside of this what looks like a concession stand. Everything was closed; it was all closed. There was no people there.
Yep.
So we set up there, and they must have had like refrigerators or something running in there, because there was a lot of RFI in that area. So that made it a little bit more difficult. We probably should have gone out into the beach, and we would have, if it wouldn't have been so darn windy, because we would have been able to get away from all that. But then we would have had a lot of wind noise in the microphone. So,
we just strapped a pole, a telescoping pole, and just ran the antenna out. And we knew, like, you know, we had just gotten off the plane. We had driven an hour out to this beach, and we were a little tired, and we knew that we needed to do clubhouse that night too.
Right.
So it was get the antenna up, let's get some 15 or 20 contacts in the books, and then let's get out of there.
Yeah. And a couple of them were like that. A couple of them, we sat there and enjoyed the time there. And a couple of them, we just got there and were like, okay, let's get this activated and head out to the next one, because we were on a schedule. We did all of this in about 4 days.
Yeah, that was a tight schedule for sure.
So, yeah. And I didn't feel like it was rushed. I mean, I didn't personally feel rushed. Inside of that 4 days, we also went to WNAW and spent an afternoon. We did clubhouse that first night and that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, you said something a minute ago about taking the time to activate or whatnot. And we took the time to activate on two or three parks, and they were the right ones to spend the that one in what's that one that was on the beach? Was that
you're talking about Maine? Fort McIntyre?
Yeah. No, Fort McCleary.
McCleary,
McCleary. That thing, that was my favorite.
Yeah, mine too.
I'm glad you love that one, because tends to be the place I go to every time I'm in Maine. You know, the views are awesome. As you watch your video, if you have a chance to go check out the videos, go check out Jason's videos and Kyle's videos on it, because they did a great job, you know, making that park look amazing.
Yeah,
it was fun. It was fun.
So in terms of like kind of your techniques and stuff like that, do you have to adapt much to what you're used to, say, back at home, in terms of, you know, either, you know, being out in, you know, the actual physical, you know, property, or, you know, just in terms of radio gear? I mean, obviously you said you combated against each other in terms of fighting for band space or whatever. Would you find you had to change anything on the fly for yourself to get, you know, make the contacts?
Other than, you know, trying to figure out where we are going to operate and what, you know, a little bit of coordination of, okay, what band are you going to start on? Okay, I'll go up or I'll go down. It was all pretty much the same. I mean, I have to give a shout out to Izzo, because he literally opened up his POTA bag and said, take what you want.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't bring a telescoping pole, and I borrowed one of Izzo's. And so that was familiar to me that's what I use whenever I go out in POTA, right? So typically I either strap it to a tree, I lean it up against a branch, I do something of that sort. And because we had our radios, our own radios, it's not like, you know, we went into this blind. So, I was relatively familiar on what I needed to do to get the park activated. There were a couple of times where I knew that I was going to call CQ and I was going to get 15 or 20 contacts, and then I was good. And you know, whenever you're calling CQ at early in the morning, you know, like the park in Vermont, you know, I called CQ many times and nobody came back to me, and I said, okay, I'm done on this band. You know, I've run this band, and do I go to another band, or do I hike back up to where Jason's at and sit around and, you know, shoot the crap with him and maybe make some sideband contacts? And all of those times I had extinguished all of the contacts that I was going to make. And I'm like, you know what? I'm done. I accomplished the task. The task was, not only did we put the APB out to say, hey, come and hunt us, and if you need Vermont, if you need New Hampshire, if you need, you know, these states, we will be on, go look for us. But the goal was for me and to Jason to get the green square from that hunted state and put that stat in our POTA stats.
You know? Activated state.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But yes, yeah, correct.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree with what Kyle said. It was the point of the trip was to get, because I have a personal goal. I want to activate a park in every state, all 50 states. And I'm probably about a little bit more than halfway there. Out of those 9 states we were in, the only one I had activated previously was New York. So I got 8 new states on this trip, and I was just, you know, I got the activation. It was fun. If we did it quick, fine. If we took our time and enjoyed it, that's also fine. So it worked out well for me either way.
So with your quick tour through New England, if you're making the trip again, was there any particular spot that kind of want to revisit, or any areas that you kind of heard about that you didn't get a chance to visit that you'd want to go check out next time?
Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine. I want to go back to those states. What is that mountain range in that comes from Vermont and then continues into New Hampshire and then Mount Washington as part of that range?
So in the Green Mountains, or in Vermont, we have the Green Mountains going north to south. New Hampshire has the White Mountains. And then in Western Mass, there's the Berkshires.
Okay. So it's the Green and the White Mountains. I would love to go a little bit farther north. Well, one, spend some more time in Vermont, because we only did the southern tip of Vermont, right? So I would love to go up and do more of Vermont. But then also, I want to go to Mount Washington. That would be really cool to drive up there and do a SOTA and a POTA up there, because I think that's a POTA.
That's a challenge, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I highly recommend in the summertime.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. They've already got snow.
So forget about that.
Yeah. But also Maine. You know, whenever I was, you know, that's my first trip to Maine. And especially on the coast there, I really enjoy the ocean. And activating that Fort McCleary State Park or historical site was awesome. I can just totally see that is the common theme all the way up the coast of Maine, all the way to Arcadia, you know?
And we've talked about doing Arcadia for, I think it's Acadia. We always call it Arcadia.
Acadia.
We've been talking about doing Acadia for like 2 years. So for me, I want to plan a trip to Acadia probably during the fall, because the summer I think is too crowded from what I'm told. Mm-hmm. But that would be, if I were to go back up there, that would be a reason to go back up there myself.
That place is magical. My wife and I, we honeymooned up there, and we go back there every summer. And I hope you guys had a chance to get a classic lobster roll.
We did.
Yes.
All right. Good.
Yes, we did.
What'd you think of the price?
Yeah.
Okay. Come on, Kyle, be honest, because we know on your video, you said it was a little astronomical in terms of what the value and market price is in lobster.
It was smaller than what I thought it would be.
For that price.
It is.
I think we paid $35 for the lobster roll and some fries. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was good. It wasn't.
Yeah, it was good.
I'm not sure if it was $35 worth, but it was good.
Yeah. It's, hey,
so you guys got to understand that lobster back in like the early days, that was the poor man's food. Those things used to be crawling on the beach. Now it's like, you know, you got to pay a fortune for them. Yeah. My friend from college, one of my old roommates, he lived in Booth Bay Harbor, which is like right on the, you know, right on the coast. And in his backyard, there's a little inlet, and he'd throw a lobster track back there. And you'd go to his house, and his mom would always have like lobster stew, lobster bisque, something going with lobster on it. And she'd be like, "Hey, Al, go get me another lobster." And he'd go out, pull up his trap, pull one out of it, and bring it in and boil it up.
Oh, wow.
So for them, it was like, yeah, he was like, lobster's nothing. But yeah, it's gotten really expensive. It used to be a lot more affordable, but lately.
It's a rich man's
food. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the rich man's food.
I mean, I was expecting, you know, probably $22 to $25. But then whenever we rolled up and everyone's like, oh, you got to go to like, I don't know, it's like Bob's or something.
Bob's Clam Shack.
Yeah. So we ended up going to, what was that other place you told us to go to, Eric? The Armory?
Talking about Kittery Trading Post?
Yeah, the Trading Post.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The Cabela's knockoff.
Yeah. So we rolled through the Cabela's there, and then we could have probably walked over to Bob's, but I sat down at Bob's and I was like, this is about $10 more than I expected to spend, but you know what? We're here. We're going to do this.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's cool. So,
well, that's good. So, you guys want to go back and do Maine and stuff. So if you came back, would you do like a, maybe split it in half, do like the mountains and then the second half head out to Maine on the coast? Cause I don't even know how many parks, Eric, are on the coast of Maine. I mean, there's probably a lot.
The ones I've done all the way up to about Saco, or actually up to Portland, and there, there's some distance between them. And some of them are wildlife. And so that's another question, but like a lot of them are wildlife preserves, so they are like almost inaccessible to get to, like, you know, by parking space or whatever, and you have to do a little bit of hike. But there's a good percentage. I can't remember. W1DED, he did majority. I think he actually completed all of his main parks. I can't remember if he finished it or not. But, yeah, he did a whole, you know, month and a half where he just buckled down and did every, you know, state, every park that he could, you know, across the state. And the ones that are up in Caribou and that place, those things are ridiculous hard to get to. So,
yeah,
the coast ones are great. I mean, like Kyle, you said, you love the Fort McCleary. You know, once you get up there, there's a bunch of other forts along the way that are just like in Saco that are just, you know, great places to activate. And, you know, they're the same kind of format.
There's a ton of parks going from like the coast of like the North Shore of Massachusetts all the way up to Maine. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could probably, right, Eric, you and I were going to, we keep planning on doing what were we going to call that thing when we did?
Well, I did an eight park Rove all the way up Route 1, and Route 1 starts in Hampton Beach, and that's in Mass, or basically starts in Salisbury State Park and goes all the way up Route 1, and you can literally hit a park every like 5 miles. It's like one of those
crazy things.
Pull in and
see, that would be a fun trip to do that if we were going to drive up there and, you know, camp along the way and whatnot. I think I would enjoy that. The reason we talk about Acadia, we didn't really mention this, so maybe for the listener that doesn't know, Acadia, the way that POTA parks are numbered, all the ones in the USA start with K, and then they're four digits. Well, Acadia National Park is 0001.
Yep.
So that's why we've been talking about it for so long, because it is number one on the list out of 9,800 or something parks that they have now.
Right.
But that's that began, and 0, 0, 2, 3, and 4, I think, are all in Alaska.
Yeah.
They're the first 20 or 30 numbers are all national parks.
So when are we doing those?
Yeah, exactly. So good question. But I mean, I'd like to. Several of those had never been activated before, and it's probably because you got to hike for about 3 days to get to some.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you check out K7ELC, I think is his channel or whatever. He's a big, Alaska guy, and he's, you know, he hikes for like 10, 12 miles to just go to a POTA park. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Like those parks that you have to hike, we might want to do those in the winter and get a snowmobile. Might be
right
out there, right?
Just rent a helicopter, man. Just
fly in, fly out.
Yeah, right.
You know, the other difference from New England than St. Louis in Missouri, and I'm sure that this is the deal in Texas, is just the amount of parks in the square mileage is just astounding. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm looking here at Massachusetts, and I mean, how long does it take to drive across Massachusetts? 3 hours?
Three and a half hours, yeah.
Okay, three and a half hours. I mean, there are probably 100 parks within a stone's throw of one another. I mean, you take a circle and take 3 hours. There's probably 300 to 400 parks, right? You do that in Missouri, you're maybe going to get maybe 150, you know, maybe 200, you know,
so
maybe.
So funny thing is, you said, so if you look at that span of Massachusetts, we'll take that as a chunk. If you look at a lot of those parks, a lot of those parks are pretty much what I call landlocked. So they're either bordered by either, you know, residential home, private homes, and access is usually trail access or no access at all because it's, you know, some, you know, some deed put in place or whatever. So a lot of those may have maybe one or two activators that may have activated it. And those are usually, at least when I go out to look at those, you know, and I do a lot of work in Mass. So, you know, I'll fly through a lot of those parks. It's like you get to a place where, you know, you're like, oh, I'm going to go activate this. But then you really pull up Google Roadmap, you know, Google Maps and, yeah, you know, Street View. And you're like, I can't get to this place. There's no way I'm going to be able to find it in half an hour. Is that mm-hmm. different for you guys, like in St. Louis or say Texas, where it's more flat?
Yeah. I mean, most of all of the parks that are in Missouri have some type of access. Even the state mm-hmm. forests and the conservation areas, they have roads that go into them, mm-hmm. and then they have like a parking lot, right, that you can literally park at.
Oh, wow. Well. How about you, like Jason, with the most of the parks down in Galveston, that area and stuff?
Yeah, they all have, I mean, you can pretty much access all of them drive-in-wise. It's my understanding was that POTA, you know, you find there's a lot of SOTA spots in Texas that have never been activated because there's some algorithm that picks what is and isn't a SOTA summit. And about 99.5% of all the land in Texas is privately owned. We don't have any BLM land out here. We don't have any public. We've got public access. We call it Army Corps of Engineer land. And like the beaches are public access and whatnot. And you're talking about Texas being a flatlands, and that's true. What people don't realize is that Texas is so big. And I'm not just saying this. I'm actually being on it, being truthful here. Texas is so big. We have East Texas is very trees, pine trees, wooded areas, not very mountainous. But if you get out to Big Bend area on West Texas, a lot of mountains, desert out there. Get up to the Panhandle, you get a lot of snow. You get down south, and it's like beach weather down there. So there's a lot of different climates inside the state of Texas, but it's easy to, I mean, being that there's just so much area, it's takes a long time to get between parks. You might find an area that has three or four or five parks in like within an hour's drive, but you're not going to, like one time I was visiting Bob from R Finder up in Long Island, and we just hopped in the truck one day and he's like, let's go activate some parks. And I probably activated seven parks in mm-hmm. like an afternoon, and we just drove to each one. We'd drive down there and sit in the car and activate and then drive to the next one. And it was just, was
we
like
are spoiled down here. Yeah.
15 to 20 minutes to 30 minutes between parks. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on? So, Texas has 250 some odd POTA entities last I checked, which is more than most states have, mm-hmm. but they're so spread out from one another. You can't really do, it's not really possible to do much in like a
short day or trip.
Yeah. You couldn't do like what Kyle and I did in New England. You couldn't do that here. Not with that many of them. Shane and I did a 5-part POTA rove. One day we hit the road one morning before sunup, and we drove all day, and we got to the park, we activated, we tore down, and we went to the next one, and we were gone all day. We got home after dark that night. We were gone for a good 12-13 hours that day, and we got 5 parks. So you do that in Long Island, you could probably get 25 parks. So
right,
I mean, you know, that kind of thing. No, I'm not complaining. It's just a different environment. And some of the parks we activated that day were really nice parks as well. So it just depends on what you're trying to do.
Well, and you know, that's a good point to make, because obviously when you came up this way, you know, you were coming into, you know, totally different territory than you're used to, right, and, you know, trying to navigate, you know, and obviously you pointed out where, you were in a couple of parks in Vermont and you had to go down side roads of people's neighborhoods, and you're like, am I really going somewhere? Or am I going to someone's backyard and, you know, going to be hearing a banjo in 5 minutes or something?
I think with you guys, you know, we're used to that. Like I'll do a park and I'll be like, oh, I get another half hour. Let's see there's a park I haven't activated. It's right down the road, like 2 miles. Yeah. And it's like one of these, you're driving on the road and then there's like the access to the forest and there might be a hiking trail or something. And mm-hmm. you just pull that's up. And that's basically, I mean, we're kind of spoiled with that. I know that when I travel down south, they're not as close together as they are up here. There's not mm-hmm. as many. So you have to actually drive a little bit farther. So it's not like, oh, well, I got a half an hour. Let me go activate a new park. Mm-hmm. You know, just in where we live, I mean, I would say how many parks are like just in within like a 10 square mile, there's got to be like there's, 5 to 10 parks easily.
12 within 25 minutes from me. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Although there are a few where with the landlocked, you know, being back in the woods and swamp nearby, unless I got some heavy DEET and insect repellent,
Mosquitoes would carry you away for sure.
Winter.
Yes.
Winter. Go in the winter.
Yeah. Well, with the winter, a lot of those swampland, you know, marshland areas, they're still like super like damp, and not a lot of them are like trail hikes. So like you're just kind of going in, you know, heavy trucking it, and you're like, okay, I'm hoping I'm going to come out of this with twin contacts, because this ain't going to be.
Yeah, you got to remember, we get a lot of snow here. So like you say, walk in winter, it could be like you could be hiking through like 3 feet of snow.
Yeah,
you need your snowshoes.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, we didn't really touch much on the airline side of stuff, but I know obviously you guys had, you know, a pretty good system when you set up, you know, to bring all that stuff on the airplane with you. So the biggest question I guess I have, and, you know, we did an episode on it in terms of the TSA and whatnot. You guys get tagged hard at all at the TSA getting stuff through, or you get lucky?
The only thing that I got tagged on was if, and here's, I learned this, and so word to the wise here. If you're going to bring radios and bring a lot of electronic equipment, don't stack it. Lay it out flat so they can all scan it and there's not things on top of one another, because both my KX3s got flagged going out and coming back, and they just wanted to scan it again. And I had TSA pre-check, so you know, I can't, the line was short, no big deal. They got my bag, they put it to the side, and they'd be like, we got something in here. And I'm like, oh, it's a ham radio. And they're like, they didn't care. They could care less. Yeah. They just wanted to take that KX3 and scan it again to make sure that it didn't.
You weren't carrying a bomb or something.
Yeah, right. But other than that, no, I didn't have any issues at all. I knew that whenever I packed my backpack and a carry-on. And if it didn't fit in the backpack and it didn't fit on the carry-on, it was not coming with me.
Good philosophy.
I had two backpacks and, two backpacks. And I always stuff, and the opposite of what Kyle just said, I always stuff my bags completely full when I fly. And if I get, and I have pre-check also, and about half the time, maybe 60% of the time, they stop me and I'm just like, you know what? Fine. Just scan it. I don't care. And, but everything I had, you know, I get the question on the channel a lot. Do you fly with ham radios? Literally every time I fly, I take a radio of some sort, usually an HT, sometimes a small QRP rig or something. And, but I always take radios with me when I'm traveling. And honestly, most of the time, that's not what, if they pull your bag aside and they said, we have to search this. Okay. That's not what they're looking for. They're usually looking for a big battery. If you have that, like a 12 amp hour or smaller battery, which is legal, allowable. Allowable on the airlines. And, I had a tripod flagged one time. It was a tripod that broke down into three pieces, and the bottom piece was a little heavy duty because it was the bottom piece that was made to stand on the legs, and it was extra sturdy, and it was
blunt weapon.
Yes, it was heavy, and they're like, well, what is this? And I'm like, you see that tripod mount on the bottom of it? That's a tripod. It goes together with this and this. And they were cool with it, but I'm like, seriously, it's a freaking tripod. So, you know, people, and again, people ask me a lot of the time, do you fly with radio? I fly with radios all the time, and the radio is usually not the thing they're curious about. So
yeah, I've been going down south, and I've had all different kinds. TSA is not consistent because they will pick and choose. And, you know, one time it was my antenna. Then the other time, what I get stopped a lot on is I forget that if I have the weight, one of those throw weights in there. That thing they're like, what is this? I'm like, it's a bean bag.
Yeah, right.
You know? Yeah. But there's no consistency. And like sometimes I get through and they don't even check anything. And then one guy, I always tell him, I say, hey, I've got some ham radio equipment in there. And he was a ham. And I honestly think he stopped me just to check out my gear. Oh, where'd you get this? Oh, this is great. And oh, we got to go check this out. And I'm like, yeah, I got to catch a flight, man.
Yeah. I usually carry my laptop with me and sometimes a tablet. And they don't really do this much anymore, but used to be when these tablets came out that were when the whole iPad and tablet thing craze started several years back, they would say, take your laptop out.
Yep.
This was before pre-check. Take your laptop out and put it on the belt. Okay. And I was like, do I have to take the tablet out? No, you don't. And then the guy at the other end was like, why didn't you take your tablet out? And I'm like, dude, seriously. And they like, they're all there in the same area and they're still not consistent because they don't talk to one another. So, but it's things like that. The reason I bring that story up, it's things like that. It's like, hey, do I have to take this out? No. Okay. And then you get down there and, or you go back when you're flying home, you go back to the same exact airport and you don't take that out. And it's like, oh no, you have to take this out. I'm like, literally 4 days ago when I was here, I didn't. So I guess you guys have changed your policy since then.
So, all right. So at least it's not just me. Like, I have the same experience. I'm like, these guys are all over. And it also depends on what airport you're at.
Yes.
You know, you go to one airport, no problem. You go to the other one, they want everything out. So,
yeah. And also I think it depends on the experience of the person who's sitting in front of that scanner too.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, totally. 100%.
Well, they had that one that Colin and I went through in Hartford coming back. They had those new jet. They look like a jet engine, the new style of scanners.
So we have them in Manchester in the New Hampshire airport.
And those they don't work. They either don't work or the guy doesn't know how to read it, because on both of my bags and both of Kyle's bags all together, like, we're going to have to rescan these. And I'm like, your fancy dancy little jet propulsion, like give you cancer from standing 10 feet outside of this thing. That can't, you think scanning again is going to help? Come on.
No. So, but second time's a charm.
I guess so, because they scanned it the second time. They're like, okay, you're good. I'm like, they're still going to want to open it up, but they didn't. And that surprised me. So.
Yeah, you know, we could go on to stories, but, you know, biggest thing for me is always batteries. You know, make sure your batteries are taped well, because if they're not taped or they're taped like they look like a bomb, they are guaranteed to be, you know, flagged, guaranteed. There's no doubt.
I print out their own rules and I hand it to the guy and I say, look, this battery's legal. This is straight from your website. Yeah. Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
Todd makes great friends with that.
Well, and the airline allows a larger battery capacity than TSA allows. Because if you look at the TSA website, it says like 100 or 110 watt hours, whatever it is. But underneath that, it says, however, airlines may vary. Well, American Airlines allows 150 watt hours. So I can take 12 amp hour, which is 144 watt hours. I have a battery specially for that. I have that battery to fly with. That's the reason I own that battery. And that's what I take. It's the largest one that American Airlines will allow. But if TSA looks at it, they're like, well, wait. And I'm like, well, I'm flying on American. It's right here. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's fine. And I've never had a problem. Sometimes they'll ask about it. But, you know, like I said, like you said, inconsistent.
Very cool. So, all right. So to kind of wrap things up a little bit, you know, in that entire 9-state rove that you guys did, what anything that you guys would change you'd want to, you know, make sure you had if you had to do it all over again? You know, is it any kind of things that you kind of thought like, okay, well, after it was all done, I just, you know, if I had this, it would have been that much better, or, you know, whatever.
More time.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have liked to spend a lot more time at more parks. Mm-hmm. You know, we were basically hitting one park per state.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I would have loved to explore, like I said, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine a little bit more. So if I'm going to do this again, I'm not going to pack so much POTA into a small amount of time, you know? And we probably could have stretched it out a little bit by not going to W1AW or, you know, HQ, or, you know, not spending as much time at individual parks. But, you know, that's the whole experience. Like,
yeah,
you know,
or cuddling up with Izzo, you know, that kind of just adds to the whole thing.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you got to have priorities. So, now that you've done it and you experience something like that, you know, you have those, okay, I've done those parks. Now I want to do other parks, but I want to do more parks. And I want to go. It's all, your first trip is almost like a scouting trip.
Yep.
Right? You're just testing the waters to see what's out there, to see what's going on. And then you see what's going on and you're like, okay, I want to come back here. I want to spend some more time around this area. So
I would go spend 3 or 4 days just in Vermont. going around, or Maine.
Okay.
Going around to different parks. Yeah. Similar to what Kyle said, the point of this trip, which was brought up earlier, was to get those state activations in our logbook. And that's what we did. We accomplished our goal. We absolutely 100% accomplished our goal. So the next time we go back, if we do it again, I think the goal would be to either just spend 4 days and go to one park per day and just burn the park down, or, you know, just try to get as many parks you can as in a single state, something like that. So, you know, some, I just kind of maybe find something that I think it's, I've been looking here recently about the least, you can go into the POTA website and you can drill down to find all the parks in a state, and then you can sort by number of QSOs and number of activations. So you can go find like the least activated parks and least activated areas.
Oh, come on, don't give the secret away. That's the only way I'm making the rounds here.
So, yeah, well, but there's always going to, I mean, even if you go do that one, then that moves something else down to the bottom of the list. There's always going to be a park that's the lowest number in the state. Mm-hmm. Even if that number's not zero. In Texas, the number is 2. The least activated park in Texas is outside of Lubbock, and it's been activated twice. There's nothing in Texas that's never been activated until they add more parks, of course.
Right.
But you know, so there's always going to be something at the bottom of that list, and it'd be a fun thing to say, okay, well, this park's only been activated a very small number of times. Let's go do that one, you know, and let's sit there for 24 hours, maybe even camp there if it's like a state park with facilities and whatnot, and just rack up several hundred QSOs and see what happens. So that would be fun.
Yeah, I think the only thing I would say is that, you know, in your entire process of going state by state and getting those 9 states down, I don't know if you felt like you had people breathing on your neck along the way, because literally after you guys left Bear Brook, 5 cars pulled in. We're all like, where is Jason? Where's Kyle? And I'm like, dude, you guys just missed them. I think they're going up to Maine. You might want to follow them that way. Yeah. And they're like, which direction did they go? And I'm like, they went that way.
Northeast. Got like a posse hunting you.
Yeah. Dude, it was insane. Like literally 5 cars all stopped me. We're like, you know, hey, I heard Jason was here. We saw him on APRS. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I know. I was here. He was here for my 10 minutes. They took 10 contacts and then they bolted. They're off to Maine.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think and that was my fault, because I was doing the giveaway of the FT5D, mm-hmm. saying, come find me on APRS. I don't think I love doing that. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think we'll do that. If Colin and I do this again, we will not do that. What we'll probably do is say, hey, we're going to go to these parks. And like the last park of the day, we'll say, hey, is going to be, Kyle had the whole thing planned out, had a whole spreadsheet. He was very meticulous about it. And it worked out.
Ham radio stuff doesn't work out, Kyle, you know, travel itinerary, you know, good career.
But we talked about doing that and saying, okay, on Thursday, we're going to do 1 or 2 parks. And the last one's going to be this park. Everyone meet us here. And roughly about this time. So we would probably do that next. That's one regret. That I have personally. I was like, I should have probably waited and not done the FT5. Although there was a guy from New Hampshire that came to that Fort McCleary in Maine and won the radio. So yep. I was really happy for him to do that. Oh, do you?
Okay. Yeah. I was like, man. I mean, not that I was looking for the radio. I ever got plenty of HTs so I could throw stones at. But yeah, it was good to see that somebody grabbed it. So
right. So, but yeah, doing a big group effort and inviting people out. I would very much like to do that next time.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Cool. That'd be awesome.
So, any parting thoughts, like anything, you know, you'd like to add just to the whole experience, that if someone was going to try to make this attempt, you know, the one thing that, you know, you kind of gleaned from it that was, you know, obviously you touched upon a little bit of it, but is there anything, you know, one takeaway that you'd like to pass off to somebody if they were looking to do this 9-state rove?
Have fun. Well, yeah. I mean, we've already paved the path for the 9 states. All you have to do is
follow Kyle's route.
Follow the route.
And honestly, the first and last day, we only did one park.
Yeah.
We did one park the first day in Rhode Island and one park the last day in Connecticut. And the other 2-3 days in the middle were three parks each, I think it was. Mm-hmm. One day was 2. But yes. Yeah, I mean, have fun. Yeah, find out in New England. Go do a 9-state POTA rove on the West Coast, and then I'll be impressed. It's easy, but give yourself enough time and just go do it, because it's really, really fun. I'd love to do it again.
Very cool.
You know, you guys could also do, you know, even coming to like New England and then working your way south, because you got New Jersey, you got Delaware, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, you know, from the tip of
with your new camper trailer.
Yeah. Nice. But like from New York, from like New York City, you know, down to Baltimore is maybe a 4.5 hour drive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get.
You know what I would love to do is maybe do. We've talked about this on Ham Radio Guy, our Ham Radio Adventure Guys channel, where, you know, Delaware, Washington, D.C., and Rhode Island are, you know, and Maryland are pretty compact states, right? And entities and locations. It would be cool to have some type of plan where you could activate all of those entities in those locations and do it in a couple of days, you know, or maybe 3 days. Delaware, you could easily do on a weekend. Maryland, you could probably do on a weekend. DC might be tough to do on a weekend because of the crowds, but then roll up to Rhode Island and do that in 4 or 5 days, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right.
Or you could do DC. You could have a POTA invasion and just have like every park activated at the same time because they're all like on top of each other.
Totally on top of each other in DC. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's DC is you have to figure out where to go in DC not to have 10 people get wrapped up in your antenna. That's the issue with DC.
Yeah.
Right.
Because there's just people everywhere. Mm-hmm. And also the security in DC is heightened, right? Yeah. You know, you start putting up a telescoping pole next to the Washington Monument and somebody's going to come over and be like, "Hey dude, what are you doing?
What are you doing?"
Yeah, yeah. Best friend. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know, this is only a personal question because I know you guys didn't obviously have enough time to you know, stop and smell the flowers, but I know Jason, you weren't a big IPA guy. And New England is not always, you know, traditionally known for their IPAs or whatever, but you are a stout guy. So my challenge to you is when you come back up this way, I need to introduce you to a bunch of stouts that are in a great, you know, a couple of great breweries around the area. We can go hang out and I get your personal opinion and, you know, being a stout guy, you know, whether or not you like them and, you know, whatnot.
I would love to, because we really couldn't find much in the way of stouts. I guess it just wasn't cold enough in New England yet. we didn't really find much at all in the way of stouts in the places we did go. So yes, challenge accepted. I would love to do that.
Very cool. All right. Well, hey, let's wrap this up here a little bit. You know, in closing, you know, thank you again for both being on here. We're glad you guys shared your experience with the POTA Rove, and hopefully we inspired a bunch of people to, you know, kind of take on that same challenge. But, you know, if you haven't a chance to see any of their videos, definitely head over to their YouTube channels and check them out, because they did a great job, you know, documenting the whole process. And, you know, playing off Fort Dummer, we'll never live that down whatsoever in New England. It's just the way it's going to be. So, you know, in closing, you know, how can our listeners, you know, find you, Jason? What's the best way?
Ham Radio 2.0 on YouTube. Ham Radio 2, the number 2, D-O-T spelled out, 0 on Instagram, Twitter, and just Ham Radio 2 on Facebook. But YouTube's my main jam, so.
Cool.
Yeah, come find me over there. Thanks for the opportunity, guys.
Yeah, no, glad to have you on. How about you, Kyle? How can I find you?
Yeah, just type in AA0Z in YouTube. And you'll go straight to my channel. And then the only thing that I have ham radio related that is not YouTube is Twitter. KYLEA0Z on Twitter. And thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Awesome.
Yeah, glad you could make it.
Well, hey, you know, as always, you know, thank you for joining Live Free and Ham Podcast. You know, remember, as we always say, you know, if you haven't subscribed, you can always connect with the show by always leaving us a review on the iTunes, you know, or our website. You can connect with us on social media for the latest information, shows, and content. And you can always support our show through Patreon or buy us a beer link, which we always appreciate. And those are all in our show notes and on our website. And always every little bit helps. So we appreciate those that have contributed. And if you need to get a hold of any of the hosts or whatever, you can always head over to our website at livefreeandham.com. So, again, thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Jason, for coming on. And thank you again, guys, for listening. From all of us at Live Free and Ham, 7-3.
7-3. Thanks, guys. 7-3.